Telling indigenous queer story is fun, if I must say. But then, as a storyteller who is interested in telling African queer stories for social change, I am forced to ask, how do we tell these stories? How do we represent ourselves, giving ourselves the best form of representation? How do we make sure we document our moments right? How do we make sure our presence is not erased from history? Hi, everybody. I am OK Timberlake, the creator of Questy Podcast, and this is Questy Podcast. If this is your first time of listening, we are your favorite Nigerian, or I say West African, LGBTIQ lifestyle podcast. And make sure you're subscribing, hitting the review, please give us these reviews, and also share us your money through our listener support. We really need your donations. You can through our website, www.questypodcast.com. Make sure you give us donations. Your money helps us produce our content further and helps us tell our stories. So on this episode of the podcast, I would be sharing from one of these nights in Ibadan where I met with this fabulous woman, Ayodele Olofintuade, the author of Lakiriboto Chronicle, who also is the author of an upcoming book titled Swallow, It's a Trilogy. And we would be discussing queering African indigenous narrative. What was the narrative of queer folks in the past? How did we document them? How did they exist? And, you know, we would be talking about our literature, our history, and our indigenous documentation of queer bodies. Enjoy. Yeah, but no, that's it. Hola, everybody. Good. Whatever the time of the day is, I am OK Timberlake, the creator of Quest City Podcast, and today I'm in Ibadan with Iyalode, and we would be reclaiming the true African narrative. My guest on this show today is, I would like her to introduce herself. She's a writer, a feminist, a staunch one. See, don't step on this woman on Twitter. She will drag you as old as she is. But then, yes, I have on the show today, Ayodele Olofintuade.
Hi, people. I am not Iyalode. First of all, because that title is a long ass way, you have to earn it and it takes years and years and years. And my name is Ayodele Olofintuade, as Timmy said.
Ayodele, how is Efushetan?
The book or the person?
The person,
the
your
person
character died.
What? Over a century ago, she committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
She committed suicide because it was her time to go, and she had accomplished her mission. I realized that was a thing with my grandmother. Well, you can't call it suicide because it's like a decision to die. I remember when my grandmother was about to die, the day before she died, she said, and she did. So it was the same way Efushetan felt like she had accomplished what she was meant to do, which was establishing a resistance against colonial invasion and a resistance against the stripping away of power from traditional systems of governance, which took away a lot of power from women and queer bodies and put them in a box that we're still fighting to get out from today.
Boom. So that brings me into how wonderful you are as a person, which I must confess, Ayodele, you are wonderful.
I'm not.
For everybody who had read Lakiriboto Chronicle.
I am not a nice person.
For everybody who had read Lakiriboto Chronicle, we know how wonderful you are in telling African or Nigerian queer narrative, most especially women narrative.
Yes.
And that brings me into saying, African literature and storytelling have evolved over years, right? Talk about the evolution of queer characters in African literature and documentation, most especially over time.
Actually, our literature has always been oral, and the reason why it was oral and not written was not only because we didn't have written tests. We had Lukumi, we had other forms of writing things, we had what did they call it? When Aroko systems, we had different societies that had their own language of coding things in images, which letters are. But in oral storytelling, queer bodies have always existed. If you go to Ifa verses, when they are chanting Ifa, you will hear the stories of queer bodies, of the queerness, of the Orishas and the Urumoles, of the non-genderization. In fact, till tomorrow, you write a non-gendered language, which shows that all persons are acknowledged as Enyo, and Enyo is a person that has been chosen to be on this plane at this point in time. Enyo is not male Enyo, it's not female Enyo, it's just Enyo. Enyo is non-binary. Enyo can be anything at any time. My favorite illustration is Oya and Songo. Oya is this fierce Osa that's in charge of death and the gates of death and the gates to which people pass to the other side of death. And there's Songo, who is this temperamental non-binary Osa, and they are always together. They are always together everywhere, you know. And it can even be seen because Oya is also the Orisha in charge of the weather and weather conditions. And so Oya wields Songo. Oya is the wind. Oya is like the storm. Oya is tornado. Oya is thunder. And Songo is her lightning that she uses. So Oya and Songo are like rice and white.
Like, you mean rice and beans?
Rice and early morning warm rice and titles in pepe and efo. That's how they are. Or better still, amala and begiri. Or better still, inyo ati efo riro. That's how they work. Complimentary.
That makes sense. So if we have the representation of notable African indigenous figures that are queer, androgynous, and every form of gender identity that do not fit into the binary, it brings us into how the literature preserve the history of queer Africans over time.
Well, as you know, there was the slavery and then there was colonialism. And the long-term goal of colonialism is, of course, the result of what we are seeing now. As if you look at what is happening in Gaza right now and Israel, that's what happened to us. That is exactly how it happened to us. It was a war, not only on our borders, it was also a war on our minds. And unfortunately, they had people who worked for them. You know, so from our own end, and so the long-term erasure of women and non-documentation of queer bodies was a deliberate thing. Recently I'm working on a project where we're talking about Nigerian feminisms, and I discovered that women have been resisting colonialism and slavery even pre-colonialism. During colonialism they resisted, post-colonialism they resisted the independence because it was full of male figures, and they said these people can't run a country and you have no right to come and ruin our country and then hand us over to these people, and they did. And right now the result of the world looking like this is the result of not documenting queer bodies. But like I said, we always think of documentation in terms of the global north and Western educational system. Queer bodies are documented. Queer bodies are revered. Queer bodies are visible. There's no way you go to a festival of any Orisha in Nigeria that you will not meet a non-gendered. I call them non-gendered bodies. Non-gendered bodies. Binary bodies, you will see them, they are open about their love and affection, they are open about themselves, They are there. I've seen so many. That I remember the last time I went to Oshobo for the Oshobo Festival. I didn't participate because I don't like participating in the major thing during the day. But in the evening when we went out, we saw so many places where queer bodies that are not even documented in our history presently, the queer bodies that we our eyes glaze over when we see them because they are not wearing the kind of clothes we are wearing due to classism. I saw these bodies and they were like leaning into each other. I can see the way they held hands openly. You can see the way they are so affectionate to one another. You can see that queer bodies exist. They've always existed and they will continue to exist. And there's nothing anybody can do about that. Mm. So now about documentation. Documentation, when you're talking about documentation now, you're talking about Western education. And the West had a plan when they came here. And their plan includes the pauperization of queer bodies and non-masculine bodies. And this pauperization is the reason why a middle-class person from, let's say, Lekki, Lagos, will come to Ibadan and think we all live on trees and we eat bananas, the same way a white person will come here and say, oh, you live in a jungle, you don't have internet. It's the same discrimination, it's the same white supremacy, it's the same classification of bodies, you know. So when you say queer bodies in Nigerian literature, it's the same way the white supremacists, a silly thing anyway, will document a black body that people are documenting queer bodies. They document them as objects, mm-hmm. They document them as plots.
Twists?
No, they call it plots something, where you use them as the plot go. And it's always these two people that are in love and they never get to love each other. And actually, when they are telling the story of a queer person, they don't tell their story. They tell the story of all the other homophobic people around them. They don't tell their stories from their own point of view. From their point of view, as they always cast as these people always in pain, always victims, like that person I was telling you about came to my house and said, you guys are always casting yourselves as victims. So that's the way the world wants to see us. They don't want to see us as fully functional human beings that have joy and pain and that shit like them. Mm-hmm. So that's the way we are framed in most literature. And that's one of the reasons I write, because was it not Toni Morrison that said that if you have a book that has not been written yet, why don't just sit down and write it? Yeah. So that's what I do.
For that, I would say, how are we ready for your trilogy?
I'm not ready yet.
No, not you, we.
Oh, you guys are not ready. Myself, I'm not ready. Okay, everybody else. When I started writing Swallow, I started writing Swallow and being very scared. I was scared. I felt like I wasn't worthy, that my voice was not worthy to write that kind of book. And I will never forget that Fumiyoda said to me on Twitter. I mean, I was there and I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm the right person to write this thing. And she said there on Twitter that, well, if nobody else is worthy, I think if nobody else should write it, you are the person that should be writing the story of Efeshito Anura. And I realized that she was right in saying that, because of all the work I've been doing and all my research. But I had to like overcome my fear of judgment, my fear of, oh, all these Yoruba people now, they will say I'm spoiling their history, mm-hmm. I'm making Efeshito queer. But Efeshito was queer. She didn't have children. She was never married. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of handmaids. Hello, Geita. And she was an independent, fierce, independent woman who was like most of the women in her of her generation. Also, in my research, like I said, when queer bodies are being documented, they are cast in this either pitiful role or they mm-hmm. are made the villains. For example, in the late 1800s, like 1870 mm-hmm. something, when the colonials started making passing laws, one of the laws that was in Nigeria's constitution was the promulgation of woman to woman marriage, and it has the same tone and used the same words as they used in the promulgation of
the SSNPA.
SSNPA.
Ooh.
So it was basically they just went and looked for that law and copy and paste the same 14 years. In fact, they will arrest, it's not the will, there are records of people being arrested because there was a story of a woman in not in Ilorin, there's another place around Ilorin that is
Ofa,
not Ofa, somewhere in Kogi now, that she went to get married, a big powerful woman, and she went to marry a girl, and the person that was giving his daughter away married to her was very happy, and then they said, no, you can't marry because there's a law now. And the woman was like, fuck all of you, I'm going to marry my wife, I love this girl. And then they brought their wedding day, they arrested the wife, they arrested the two wives, they arrested the family of the first wife, they arrested the family of the second wife, they put them all in prison. They said that they are practicing prostitution.
Oh.
They said, so like Yoruba people live in compounds, they said that all people in their compounds are prostitutes.
Damn.
So they arrested all of them and put them in jail and seized the woman's goods and nearly ruined her. So there are records of these things happening. There are records of Orisha that would be passing through a city or a town and one man would come and say, Orisha, now come and stay in my house. Now I like you. Let's stay together. Let's live together. Okay. What if I marry my daughter to you so I can stay with me? All these practices are like things that like are there in our oral history. They are there in our day-to-day language. She ain't to me and say she ain't feed the booty. We should do me. And we all know what scissoring means.
Okay, hello everybody. It's you now. I never knew Fidigo did me scissoring. What? Till now, I never knew. How am I supposed to know that Fidigo did me scissoring, Ayodele? How?
Oh, go you back.
Fidigo ed.
Yeah. What
use
do you
nyash and use nyash to scratch each other.
So what do you call?
Well. Hola, y'all have to go and figure that. Go and figure it. Oh my God. So, Adele, I'm going to dive a little bit deep, but then it's going to be on your face or on the surface. So, I'm asking this, that as a queer woman in arts, would you be kind enough to share an example of executive homophobia and or misogyny?
Oh my God!
Because I know you have a lot to tell about that.
Actually, like there's always a lot to say about those things, and I guess I'm one of the lucky ones. I can't call myself lucky because I took a lot of trauma and a lot of fighting back to like create a space where I can now make money from my writing. Because misogyny and homophobia is so casual that people don't even know that's what they are doing, and this includes quote and unquote allies. Even people that you trust don't know they are being homophobic when they are doing certain things. I remember the first when I was writing Lacrimal to Chronicles, my Nigerian editor, before I finally took it away from her and gave it to somebody else, said, oh, why are you being something against the male gender? And I said, I'm not being anything against the male gender. There's no such thing called the male gender. Gender is a construct, and you saying using the words male gender shows that you don't even know anything about what feminism is about or what this book is about. Of course, there's a lot of discrimination already, class discrimination in writing, because for you to be a writer, you belong to a certain class, because the arts generally, you have to belong to a certain class because it requires a lot of money, a lot of funding to do these things. And it has been so carved into a niche that even if you're a black writer, your pay will be different from a white writer's pay, even if you write a better book than a white writer. So these things are like classified, they are stratified. So yeah, I'm not centering pain. I've had too much of that. I've had too much of trauma that I've had to deal with. over time, which of course affected my own daily life and daily experience, the way I see the world. And I'm choosing joy on a daily basis.
Yes.
Fucking enjoyment. Thank you very much. You have money, send it to me. I'm ready to spend it for you. Thank you. I have resisted all my life, and I will continue to resist. When I realized that Nigerian publications don't pay Nigerians to write, I took my publications and went to look for French journals and started selling my stories. That was the first time I realized that I can actually live off writing. And I've done that for 7 years. I'm not going to lie, that it's been easy. I have suffered in this my life. I am still suffering. Send me 5 billion naira. Thank you very much. I'm just glad that I've come to a place where I have entered myself, and I have been able to build a community of love and safety for myself and members of my family. And I'm also learning how to filter, and I will no longer allow trauma into my space.
Yes, energy.
Misogyny and homophobia are real. The only way to take away their power is to not give it to them. It's to resist and to stand your ground.
Yeah, but I resist and stand your ground. Ayodele said that. Ayodele, I'll be ending this episode by asking, do you think African literature in recent time had aided the societal rejection of queer folks?
To be honest, see, I was talking about people that I laughingly call baby gays. And that's B-A-B-Y-G-H-E-Y. Yes, baby gays. I have never been prouder to be a part of the LGBTQI community in Nigeria. I have never been prouder to stand up and say, yeah, all these years that we have fought back, all these years that we have resisted. Yes, there are people that even resisted more than us. These people are mad. They will not take any prisoners.
Yes.
They are writing, they are speaking. And I also, I keep telling people this, create your own audience. Don't pander. Don't wait for somebody to validate you. You are enough. The fact that in this kind of situation in Nigeria that you are even doing anything artistic, and you don't have, what's it called?
Money? Some
funds.
Money?
No, they call it the grants. Not even grants. Children. This fund that your parents, they have this fund that they give rich.
What's it called? So, I'm sorry, I'm not rich, so I can't have the word in my
head. Yes, sorry. So these poor people, since you don't have that kind of funding from home, and so you are sitting there and writing something amazing, and I tell people, don't send me your work. I'm not a magazine. I'm not anything. Send your work out to queer magazines. There are so many queer magazines out there that pay, and they pay. Don't cultivate your own audience. People are just doing their own shit these days, and they don't send you because they know whether they do it or they don't do it, they will be broke anyway. So why don't you just do it and be broke anyway? And you'll be surprised. You'll find your audience. Like when we finally published the Black Rainbow to Chronicles, people were like, oh, nobody's going to buy your book, nobody's going to read your book. And I'm not going to tell you. But anyway, people are buying my book and they are reading my book, and I have a lot of fans across the world, and they are giving me wrong about. But anyway,
Ayodele,
create your own economy, stand your ground, and yeah, thank you.
Ayodele, thank you for joining. Thank you for joining my podcast today.
It's a pleasure.
A really big pleasure to have you.
Yeah.
And you know I love you, right?
Yeah, of course I love you too, Timmy.
Yes!
But I'm not a nice person.
Well, you didn't have to be. Bye everybody. Bye. I love you. Don't forget to share if you enjoyed this episode. Also, Glow Up Pride 2021 is here. Whoop! We're having our virtual pride again, honeys. Go get prepared because we're about to go fabulous.